on WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Reese Helmick with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, July 30th. Here's your chance to give your 2 cents about how you think Sarasota should plan for walking, biking, buses, trains, and cars. The City of Sarasota is updating its transportation chapter of the Sarasota City Plan, which is the city's state-mandated comprehensive plan, and it is asking residents to fill out their survey. This is a long-range policy document that will guide decisions about land use, transportation, and other key aspects of community growth and development. The Florida Community Planning Act requires all cities and counties to update their comprehensive plans for transportation, which helps make sure the city's long-term planning stays up to date with current needs, growth, and community priorities. The transportation chapter update will build on the Sarasota in Motion Transportation Master Plan and is to be shaped by the input of the community. The update serves as the community's opportunity to shape a healthier and more connected Sarasota, where transportation is made easy and accessible to everyone. To take the survey, go to engage.sarasotafl.gov/transportationchapter. The Manatee County Commission approved the purchase of the former Mixon Fruit Farms for $13.5 million yesterday. The deal includes a farm store, a pavilion, and a house. The county will now manage the historic farm, which will serve as a venue for weddings and other events. A newly hired Natural Resources Program Manager will develop and manage programs focused on water quality and conservation. This will include a focus on community gardening, microgardens, composting soil and health, agritourism, and cooperative farming models. The county also plans to build a library on the premises. The farm is being sold by owners Janet and Dean Mixon due to ongoing staffing issues and loss of produce from Hurricane Ian. The Mixons say that economics and disease affecting the trees and fruit were too much to overcome. Janet Mixon also cited the decline of the citrus industry and government regulations as leading factors in the family selling the farm. The Baranchik Foundation approved $8.1 million in grants to fund the work of nonprofits in the region. That includes investments in the construction of a new Boys and Girls Club in Newtown, improved access to prenatal care for women with high-risk pregnancies, and affordable housing for teachers in DeSoto County. The latest batch of funding brings the foundation's total grant funds to more than $23 million for the year. The recipients include One Stop Housing Cares, Greater Sarasota Chamber of Commerce Foundation, MRC Health, Florida Cultural Group, and Sarasota Baywatch. This has been Reese Helmick with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, July 30th.
Back of my memory, like a honeybee buzzing round a glass of sweet Chablis. The radio's on, windows rolled up, and my mind's rolled down. Headlights shining like silver moons rolling on the ground. We made love in every way love can be made, and we made time looked like time could never fade. Friday night, we both made the guitar hum. Saturday made Sunday feel like it would never come. Gonna be a long Monday, sitting all alone on a mountain by a river that has no end. Gonna be a long Monday, stuck like the tick of a clock that's come unwound again. soul, heart to heart and cheek to cheek. Oh, come on, baby, give me a kiss that'll last all week. The thought of you leaving again brings me down. The promise of your sweet love brings me around. Gonna be a long Monday, sitting all alone on a mountain by a river that has no end. It's gonna be a long Monday, stuck like the tick of a clock that's come unwound again and again.
John. You can always say hello first. Are you there, John?
Bob, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I had to run and get Jesse's help. I still don't know what was wrong, but he got it on. I think we're ready to go. Go ahead.
Yeah. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report. Are you there, John Dickman, and the control board? I guess I'm... Yes. Are you there?
Okay. Yeah, my mic wasn't on.
You are there, John, right? You're there.
I am.
You're controlling things there in the studio.
Well, I don't know how well of a job I'm doing this morning. I don't know.
Yeah,
what
well, that's okay.
Here,
but... We're all a little asleep at 9 a.m. because you are up at 4 a.m. So, you know, I know how that works. But I'm up here in Massachusetts, John. I think you know that. I'll let the listeners know. And before I left, I had an interview with my chiropractor. Now, I've been seeing Dr. Ron Gilbert for quite a while in Bradenton, and I noticed a year ago he had a book on his desk, and the title of the book was Side Effects, and the pharmaceutical drug cartel. So he and a few other doctors had written a book on the side effects of drugs. And I said, geez, doctor, how would you like to be on my Peace and Justice Report and talk about your book? And he said, sure. And he handed me a book. And that was quite a while ago. And so a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, doctor, I'm going to be away for the week of July, the last week in July, and I'd like to have record an interview with you so we could talk about your book. He said, what do you want to talk about? Well, you handed me that book on the side effects of pharmaceutical drugs. I'd rather talk about statins. He said, I'd rather talk about statins. I said, well, whatever you want to talk about, doctor, is fine with me. That's fine. So you can talk about statins. But before I play the interview with Dr. Ron Gilbert, if you want to pull him up while you're listening to the interview, the website for his office is chiropractorbradenton.com. chiropractorbradenton.com. And he has been in the industry. This, he'll say right at the beginning of the interview, I've been a chiropractor for 39 years. So he has been, and his list of credentials is really, really impressive, and I'm not going to read them now, but that's why I have given you the website. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gilbert, just go to chiropractorbradenton.com. And he's treated over 70,000 patients in chiropractor and wound care over the last 38 years. So, John, before you play the interview, I'd like to mention that the opinions expressed on this interview are strictly those of Dr. Gilbert and myself and do not necessarily reflect those of the management team, board of directors, or any of the volunteers affiliated with the station. So with that being said, John, you want to, we'll play the interview. It's about a 35-minute interview, and we'll come back to you after the completion of the interview. Okay, right. John.
Okay, Bob. And give me a call. I'm going to turn the phone on.
I'll give you a call.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Come on. What is the story?
I've been in practice 39 years, and I have seen a lot of people who have been put on statins because their cholesterol levels were 200 to 10. We do know back in 1977, the total cholesterol limits used to be 300, and then over time they got lowered to now 180 to 200, and the big concentration is on low-density lipoproteins, also known as the bad cholesterol, although that LDL, those LDLs are needed for all sorts of functions in the body. And what is that number, and where does it make a difference on that? Now, I have seen over the years right now, just to give you an idea, in the United States, 35% of the population are taking statin, or in other words, around 92 million people or better are on statin drugs. And there are, you have to weigh the benefits of having and taking a statin versus the side effects. And for instance, there have been studies done where basically taking statins, the prevention of heart attacks is like 1 out of 100 on that. And plenty of other studies by a lot of different authorities, cardiovascular surgeons, people who wrote the book on cardiovascular disease say that it's not necessarily the cholesterol levels that are creating the problems, but lifestyle and diet which are creating the cardiovascular disease. So some of the side effects that I see personally in practice and are also well documented are, as a result of taking statins, can be dementia, type 2 diabetes, increased blood sugars. We also see cataracts in the eyes, depressed immune function, myalgias, which is muscle aches and pains, and which can be also more serious if it continues. We also see things like delayed wound healing, and I happen to have a patent on wound care, and two of the top-notch wound docs, Dr. Carolyn Fife and Dr. Patricia Smith, to talk about statins and delayed wound healing. So there is something that one has to weigh when one takes a statin and how it's going to affect your body and what are the pros and cons to it. And you have to weigh in on that. There's studies that talk about it's inappropriate to take a statin after you're 75 years or older. And what is really the true cause of the mortality in that person? Is it from the cholesterol, the cardiovascular disease, or is it for some other thing? Now, when you take a statin, and it is well known that you invested it, you should be taking coenzyme Q10. It's a supplement that that is needed. Also, a defined portion of that's called ubiquinol. But statins rob you of that, and every cell in the body needs that. So if you're not taking that, it'll be a pretty good thing to take. Otherwise, you can go to the effect of other problems from taking the statin. Statins also are a little tough on the liver. So having liver enzymes and that being checked on a regular basis is important because the liver filters things out and it does that.
Can I just ask one question? Because
sure.
you mentioned 75 years old, you should not be taking.
Yes, that's what a lot of the studies say.
The studies say that.
And here's an article coming out of U.S. Pharmacists. Some statins appear to increase dementia in patients with mild cognitive issues. So this is not. This is not a conspiracy thing. It's factual. Now, I have also reviewed articles about how great statins are, and the studies that are done on them, the retrospective studies. But very interesting, you look at who funds these things, and it's Big Pharma who's funding the people who wrote these articles. So how biased are they? And I have to look at that and go, well, yeah. Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson, they're the ones who are giving the information to the people writing these studies. So, you know, is the Earth flat and has nobody ever landed on the moon? Who knows? But you have to take a look at the source and how valid the sources are.
So I think the 75-year-old number comes into play because when you're at that age,
right,
you may have other health concerns or health issues. And the statin is going to play a role in maybe making them worse?
That's correct.
All right.
That's
got that.
And you have to weigh in on that and say, what does it really mean as far as somebody's outcomes and why they're taking that statin? Now, there's some better forms of statin and there's worse forms of statins. And I was reading an article about how it's a $1 trillion worldwide industry. It's massive. It's one of the most popular drugs out there. And just because a good example, I would use myself as a good example. I have two different cardiologists. I happen to have a widowmaker in my heart. And so I keep an eye on that. And I had a few years ago,
I had a widowmaker,
which kills you basically. So it's in the LAD artery in the heart. If you have a calcification and it blocks, it's why they call it the widowmaker. So a few years ago, I had a CTA, CAT scan that with some dye that took a look at the vessels in the heart, and it said I had a 25 to 35% occlusion of my LAD. Okay. Well, recently I was having what's called premature ventricular contraction, so I went to the cardiologist that said my stress test was a little abnormal. So I needed what's called I went to the hospital, I had a study done where they took a look inside the heart and said I had less than 10% of the LAD occluded. So I've been doing things to help decalcify the vessels in my system, and there are things that you could do naturally. Yet, interestingly enough, both cardiologists wanted to put me on a statin drug because my LDLs were like 140. Yet, you can see the research on that and say that's not a problem having your LDLs at 140. So who makes the numbers on that? And if you have a visual look in the heart and you say everything is clean, why would you want to put somebody on a statin when visually it's clean on that?
Well, I know this is related, but could we clarify before we continue in the explanation the good cholesterol against the bad cholesterol? Because that's related to the level we're talking about, right? The numbers that you're referring to, the bad cholesterol?
Correct. So let's talk about LDLs, low-density lipoproteins. While they're often referred as bad cholesterol due to the association with cardiovascular disease, and that's what primarily statins target, LDLs play a vital role in several essential bodily functions. Cholesterol delivery, LDLs acts as a carrier transporting cholesterol from the liver to the cells throughout the body where it's needed for various processes, cellular processes. Cholesterol delivered by LDLs is essential for building and maintaining cell membranes, ensuring their flexibility and structural integrity. Hormone synthesis, LDLs deliver cholesterol, which is then used as a precursor for producing crucial steroid hormones like estrogen, testosterone, and adrenal hormones such as cortisone and aldosterone. Vitamin D production. Cholesterol delivered by LDLs is a key component in the synthesis of vitamin D, which plays a role in calcium absorption and overall metabolic health. Bile acid production, immune system production, and the list goes on. So LDLs are, as although called bad cholesterol, have a lot of vital functions in the body. And the question is, what is that number? You know, again, back in 77, the total cholesterol It was 300 on that. And then it just got cute, and we started lowering it. And so the whole industry is a trillion-dollar-a-year industry, you know, worldwide. It's huge. And a lot of people, unfortunately, are put on that. Although you go to Italy, for instance, and 12% of the population are on cholesterol statin drugs versus the United States, which is the leader in the whole world, which are 35% or better as far as cholesterol and statins. So who's driving this? What's the propaganda behind it? And what's, if you look at the research, you say, what makes sense or what doesn't make sense? Examine the evidence. I like to consider myself a bit of a researcher, so I can pick up articles like, we can talk about the carcinogenicity of lipid-lowering drugs. This was published in the Journal of American Medical Association back in 1996. It talks about how cholesterol-lowering medications create cancer and that. And one of the things that came out of this is most cholesterol-lowering drugs cause or promote cancer. This was, if you look at that and you look at the studies on it, you go, huh, does it make sense for me, especially if I might have a predisposition for cancer? And then there's a study that was done in The Lancet back in 2001. Great, this is dated, but it's of cholesterol and all-cause mortality in elderly people in Honolulu, Heart Program, a cohort study. And the conclusion of this particular study is our data accord with previous findings of increased mortality in elderly people with low serum cholesterol and show that long-term persistence of low cholesterol concentration actually increases the risk of death. So you do want to have some cholesterol in your system. You want to drop it to the point 60% of the brain is cholesterol. Henceforth, if we start messing with that, do we develop dementia? Well, we're seeing the increase in Alzheimer's and dementia worldwide, which, you look at Alzheimer's, that's a $400,000 problem for the person, typical person who's got Alzheimer's. That's huge as far as monetarily on that. So what can we do? I mean, there's natural things we can do to if we need to lower cholesterol, like taking garlic, like taking eating oatmeal. It absorbs that, taking fish oils. If you look at statistically, 80% of the world population uses alternative medicine. You look at ADEs, adverse drug events, in the United States, it's the third leading cause of death from drugs, prescription drugs. You look at Big Pharma and where they rank, and they're within the five, you know, top industries in this country on that. You know, health is, or medical and health is the number one industry. You look at the numbers as far as ADRs, and they're actually, below that are strokes and respiratory illnesses. ADRs or ADE, adverse drug events, are pretty huge and probably underestimated. So you look at that and you go, what makes sense? We look at this and we go, who's driving this? There's 1,700 lobbyists in Congress in Washington, D.C. for the drug industry. Well, that buys a little bit of influence
oh, yeah,
on this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I take a look at that and I go, well, what makes sense? Why am I seeing in practice people who are coming in and I have a patent on wound care where I see the wounds delayed because they're on a statin. And,
you see the wounds, what was that again?
They're delayed in their healing because they're on a statin.
Oh, delayed in their healing, right.
Or why I'm seeing lots of people with cataracts in the eyes. Why? Because they're, one of the side effects are statins. Why are people developing type 2 diabetes, which is exponentially growing? Well, statins can create, and that's, well, documented type 2 diabetes, which increases blood sugar and increases other problems. In other words, all those other comorbidities on that.
Right.
So we have choices, you know. So going back to the cardiologist, then they wanted to put me on a cholesterol med, and I remember saying to them both, well, we can agree to disagree. You can tell me that, you know, here is statistically this, and I can show you the research behind why I choose not to take a statin and how I can control my cholesterol through natural means without having the side effects, because that's not something I would desire to have, plain and simple.
Well, you're an alternative practitioner. You said 39 years as a chiropractor. It just came into my mind now. You said that 80% using...
of the world population uses alternative medicine.
Like in the U.S., 80% of the population?
No, of the world.
Of the world.
And we used to rank 38th in the world as far as health care. Right. Back in the day, the Dominican Republic was 37, one better than us, and they're one of the second poorest nations in the Caribbean,
right,
under Haiti,
right,
on that. So, you look at the numbers and you say most of the world population uses alternative medicine.
What do you think it is in the United States if it's 80% in the world?
Well, if we rank 38th or less, we're not the healthiest nation. You know, when it comes to preventative, you look at countries where they have better soils and better products in their crops. You know, we have a society here, we use a lot of Roundup, and Roundup tends to chelate the soils, which means there's a lot of nutrients, especially magnesium, that's not getting into the food, which then doesn't get into the animals, and there's a lot of magnesium deficiencies. So it's probably a pretty good bet to take a magnesium supplement, since it controls about 300 functions in the body, so that we don't go to the effect of not overdeveloping those deficiencies. But if we're not getting the nutrients from our foods, then we need to supplement so that we do get that, or buy better foods that are more organic or less tainted, and we'll do better as a general rule.
Yeah. Well, the thought that went through my head was we all, especially if we're on Medicare, and most of us have a primary care physician. And so my thought was, and a lot of primary care physicians might automatically just say, I have a kind of an alternative doctor, but I think he recommended a statin for me, if I can remember correctly. I don't know, but is vitamin K something that you can take or should take?
That'll help decalcify you, yes.
Yeah.
Taking vitamin K.
Right. Yeah. So my point was, I think we all should have an alternative practitioner to give us maybe some different input than we might be getting from our primary care physician, so that we don't have the total responsibility of educating ourselves on our own. We also have an alternative practitioner that we can bounce the ideas we get from them and compare it to what the primary care physician has to say.
That should be a staple, yes. Yeah. We should have choices.
Right.
It shouldn't be, you shouldn't go to your primary and they say it's my way or the highway. You should say, well, what do you, now, for instance, as a chiropractor, I've been in lots of surgeries. I've been in with famous neurosurgeons, orthoneuro specialists. I've seen fusions. I've seen brain surgeries. Somebody might go to a neurosurgeon and he does a fusion in the neck and says, don't ever get your neck adjusted. And I would say, really? Well, when they fuse it, it should be stable, number one. And number two, the areas above and below those level of fusions are going to take a lot more stress. So why not make them perform better before they have another problem that comes down the road, because that wasn't addressed or handled, along with nutrition, exercise, and all the other components, which in my mind, when I developed the patent for wound care, it's called a method and system for treating wounds. It's very logical. How do you sequentially put things together so the outcomes are good? So henceforth, my patent, the title of it is called A Method and System for Treating Wounds. And I use nutraceuticals. I use laser. I use exercise. I use a lot of components to get somebody with a big picture producing and performing well, versus just going and sitting, become a couch potato and going down the tubes. Henceforth, my first case, I don't know if I mentioned that, but first case in wound care, a guy came in and he had spent 2.5 years in wound care with a really nasty wound on his ankle. They wanted to amputate his foot. He had spent $650,000. He had 10 grafts, 70 hours of hyperbarics. He was on 10 plus medications. He had COPD, failed kidneys, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, peripheral artery disease, multiple meds, IV. I mean, the guy was complicated by all standards. And bottom line is, they couldn't get rid of the MRSA, and they wanted to amputate his foot after 2.5 years. He came in to me on crutches saying, I've heard about you. Is there anything you can do? And I tend to like to think outside the box. I said, well, if we do this, 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 and this sequence, first we have to kill the MRSA, eliminate it. So I developed a product that actually gets rid of MRSA. Then I said, we need to regenerate the tissue, so I started using a laser and then opened the circulation to that area and put him on certain nutraceuticals. In 1 week, he was playing golf. In 2 months, he was totally healed.
Wow.
At this time, this was well over 13 years ago, it cost him less than $2,000.
Right.
After spending $650,000.
Oh, my God.
And he didn't lose his foot.
Right.
That's the big thing. Because once you lose a foot, the mortality rate starts to go up as far as you going down the tubes as far as longevity of life on that. So it's really important to understand the sequence. Now, I treat every patient who comes in and sees me. Well, what is it, a methadone system for treating a herniated disc or a methadone system for treating dementia, whatever. What is the proper order in that? And there are things that you can do that do create very efficient outcomes on that. And so going back to the neurosurgeon who tells the patient, don't ever get your neck adjusted after I do the fusion on that, is like, wow, what does he really know about manipulation? Yeah, or what has he studied about that? Because it's huge, it's massive, and it's very, very effective of the studies on that. But if he's old school and just thinks, don't do this after I do that, well, then the patient is not going to benefit. Then they will eventually have another problem on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I like to at least give people choices. And yeah. I like to give them information. You can read about that, make your own decision, but read the data.
Yeah.
It's there. Yeah. Are you exposed to it? Or are you blind to it? Or are these surgeons coming in here? A good example, I had a case that just came in the other day, and she had what's called dropped head syndrome, where her head just dropped after being vaccinated. Now, I started working on her, and she is starting to get the mobility back in her neck, and her head's starting to come up. But I sent her to a neurosurgeon for an opinion, and his opinion was, because of the shot, she developed inflammation in the brain, and that's why she developed a drop head. Now, that was his opinion. We've done the MRIs of the brain and whatnot, but he said to her, he didn't say stop seeing that chiropractor. He said, whatever he's doing is working, so go back there and continue on, because we're seeing the change. And that's working in cooperation. And that's somebody who is more educated versus old school, where, you know, it's my way or the highway, don't do this, versus what can you do to totally allow that patient to be benefiting from alternative care or conventional and alternative care.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious about that because I never heard that before, to drop head.
It was, believe me, it was the first time I've seen it. And she prior to seeing me, she went to an alternative clinic and they did all sorts of alternative care, and she didn't see the results. She came here. She heard about what we do. And she's making the progress, and a happy camper. But
right.
We're doing things sequentially to make that difference. And it's not just adjusting. We're also using lasers and exercises, and I'm eliminating the things that can trigger these things. But it is interesting that for this particular person, she never had a problem until she had the COVID vaccinations. Then all of a sudden, everything went sour for her.
Right. So can you Google that dropped head syndrome? And
you can Google and see side effects from immunizations and stuff like that, and weigh in on it, whether or not it's real for you or not. But yes, you can see those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
the first time I've seen the drop head syndrome.
Right.
And it's not fun to be a person who you can't lift your head up and it just drops on that. So,
no.
But there's things you could do to make a difference on that.
You can't even see where you're walking.
Well, you can't lift your head up.
Right.
You know?
That's what I'm thinking. If you're walking down the street, then you can't lift your head up.
No, but here we have a neurosurgeon saying it's working, whatever he's doing, go back there and continue on with that care.
Right.
And for me, I say, well, a lot of people in this world use alternative medicine. It's big and it's powerful and it's available. You just have to know what it's about. And of course, you have to separate the stuff that's not practical or not real or just garbage versus stuff that is very real and useful on that. It's just like supplements. There's a little bit uncontrolled, but the supplements, there's really high quality supplements and there's crappy supplements.
Right.
And what makes the difference? Well, read the labels and see who makes it. Do they audit their product? And is it going to deliver what it promises to deliver, or is it crap? You know?
Right. Well, sometimes it's so difficult to tell, right? I mean, if you're taking a
supplement. For the average person, if you don't do your research, you know that there's different, like, for instance, people think take a calcium supplement because you have loss of bone density. Yet there's a famous cardiologist who wrote a book about that, and he calls it death by calcium.
Yeah.
Thomas Levy, MD, JD. He's a board-certified cardiologist. But if you take a calcium supplement, calcium tends to be cytotoxic. And that's a misnomer to think that you take a calcium supplement for bone density. And if you read the book, and I have plenty of research outside of the book that talks about calcium supplementation, there's a time and a place, and most often than not, You don't want to be taking a calcium supplement because you could be hurting yourself. Now, there are some exceptions if you have gastric bypass and stuff like that, that you need more calcium. But as a general rule, taking a calcium supplement could create a problem for you. And there's different forms of calcium, some really crappy and some quite good. But know what you're dealing with before you take it, because you go to your doctor and he says, oh, you're osteoporotic, osteopenic, you have lots of bone, take a calcium supplement. Well, how about taking vitamin C or doing some other things? Read the book. It was, again, it's called Death by Calcium, but it'll open your eyes as far as the research behind it. Very well researched. And you can make your own decision once you read it. You might feel violated after the doctor says, take this, and you go, what does he or she know about this topic? Or are they just going by, oh, the British Medical Journal, who published an article about Tums. Tums used to be a big thing. Take a Tums because it's a cheap form of calcium, but it's great for loss of bone density. And then they discover, no, Tums is an antacid, and you need acid to break the calcium down. So if you neutralize that, that's not a good thing.
Right.
But again, we go on and on with what type of supplements you should take and when is it beneficial.
Right. So, I mean, I think when you talk about supplements, and some supplements, the poor quality, and we're talking about drugs here, so a poor quality supplement or a supplement that you really shouldn't be taking can be as detrimental to you as a drug that the side effects from a drug.
Correct. Right? Funny. This was a while ago, but I remember a patient telling me how they took their supplement and they were having some issues with their back. And we took a picture and I said, there, you can see your supplement right there. It's about on its way out, but it's right over there in your intestines.
Oh.
It wasn't being digested.
Right.
So that, and you go to, it's interesting, if you go to septic field stations where they take, you know, septic tanks, and you'll see mounds of drugs and supplements that have never been processed in there.
I have a question, because I have all these supplements I inherited from my brother. He's left the planet, and I have a lot of old supplements I do not use anymore.
Right.
And I want to discard them. Where should I put all these supplements? Should I just throw them in?
You can throw them in the garbage.
Just throw them in the garbage.
I would think. I mean, if it's a drug, you want to dispose of it properly or flush it down or whatever. But
yeah, but they're just supplements.
Now, when supplements go bad
on
that, or if you have oils can go rancid.
Right.
So some people with fish oil, as we keep all our fish oils refrigerated.
Right.
Because they can go rancid.
Right.
And
right.
That's not going to, your body's not going to like that.
Right.
So you want a quality, even fish oils, you want to make sure that the company audits itself and you're not dealing with mercury-tainted fish oils. Because that's, and some companies are honorable and some just take the batch and they process it, but you wouldn't know if it's tainted.
Right.
Unless you did your homework on it.
Right.
So,
right.
Or if it's left in a really hot area, so it goes rancid, keep it cool. Oils, again, can go rancid. So we keep our oils in a fridge.
Right.
So it's cool and it lasts and whatnot. Well, we're getting off the top.
No, I was just going to say that we can eliminate
this.
We can decide where we want to go from here. We have a good 15 minutes or so if you want to continue.
Yeah. Here's an article of the benefits of statins been overstated. You know, cholesterol-lowering statins are one of the world's most commonly used medications. Well, again, do we have alternatives? And do we weigh in on the side effects versus the benefits of them? And are the benefits, can they be overstated? Or are they more beneficial for somebody who has an acute heart condition initially and then not be put on that for the rest of their lives on that? And again, we talked about the bad cholesterol, but it has benefits to it. And what else can we... What else can we discuss here? There's just plenty, plenty of research out there about the actual, I mean, it's a huge industry, Lipitor, Crestor, and you have to ask yourself, what, if I take this, what does it mean? What am I going to, am I going to get sick or feel crappy from the side effects and weigh the benefits of dropping my LDLs? Versus, is it in that acceptable range? Is it useful for my body to function? Am I finding myself, if I take a cholesterol-lowering medication, becoming a little bit more forgetful? People will know that, or cloudy-haired, you know, in the brain fog? Is there, or muscle aches, which is one of the more common things when you take a cholesterol med, your muscles start to ache, or other side effects? Peripheral neuropathies happens to be a side effect from cholesterol meds. You know, so you look at that and go, wow, how many people have peripheral neuropathies? And is it coming from the diabetes, which can, again, be a side effect from the cholesterol meds, or increased blood sugar, or am I taking one thing that's creating another thing? Or do I have, am I pre-diabetic, but I take the cholesterol med, and now I'm full diabetic? You know, did it jump me to another level on that? You know, if I have an enlarged prostate and somebody says, I want you to take finasteride to shrink your prostate, and one of the side effects from finasteride, for instance, is a high-risk prostate cancer. Well, you got to weigh in and go, do I want to take this to shrink it and potentially put myself at risk of having prostate cancer? Or do I want to do some other things to naturally keep the prostate in check, watch my diet, and go that route? You have choices on that. So we all have choices.
Yeah, that's the key word right there, choices.
But it's a matter of educating or a matter of finding a doc who can lay the truth on you, give you the data, and you can make that decision. I know, for instance, yes, I open my mouth and I tell patients information, but I can 100% give them the data to back it up as far as here's the information, you read about it, you tell me if it makes sense to you. I'm not going to say jump and you say how high just because I tell you to jump.
Right.
It's like, look at the data and see if it makes sense to you.
Right.
And that makes a difference in outcomes. Yeah. That makes a difference in how you as a patient feel on that and gives you a little peace of mind. I mean, I can give you another example, and you know, just my own personal health. I've had a bit of a chronic cough for a while, and I've been trying to figure out, why do I have this chronic cough? I've had CTs, not to go into my history, but I had bladder cancer 25 years ago, cured it, no problem with that. I guess I could say I'm a cancer survivor. I'm 68 years young. But I've been having this cough, and I've been to the cardiologist. I've had PVCs of the heart. I'm like, where is this coming from? Is it coming from the coffee? Is it coming from stress? Is it coming from a cardiovascular condition? Your mind wanders, and you go, what's the why behind this? So I've been to the pulmonary specialist who said, why don't you take these drugs for GERD and for post-nasal, you know, sinus drip, which both of which I don't have, but it's usually the number one and number two things that people will put you on. Yeah, but what's the why behind the cough? And to the cardiologist, the PVCs, they did the CAT. That's what we're, you know, that's where I was having my little mind blank on. They did a CAT on me, and they said, my heart looks great. Okay, so where did the PVCs come from? And where is this chronic cough coming from? And I finally found the why behind it. It was like the nodules on the thyroid, which can compress the recurrent laryngeal nerve, which can create a chronic cough, which affects the vagus nerve and create all sorts of other symptoms. That's the why. Took me a little while to figure it out. I'm pretty good at figuring out.
Right.
But it's
how was it finally?
But how many drugs would I have been put on, and how many misdiagnoses would I have gone through to find out the true why behind why I was coughing? So if you've got a chronic cough, you may want to consider the thyroid, which is a master gland in the body, and it causing that effect.
Yeah. Interesting. How did they finally find out?
I found out because I did an ultrasound, and I had some nodules on the thyroid.
Right.
Which was like, oh, this is interesting. I had an ultrasound done back in 2012, many years ago. I don't want to get into my personal history, and I had two little teeny nodules on that. Now I went from 2 to 6, so there's something going on there.
So how did you treat them then?
Well, I'm getting it in the midst of exploring and seeing how we're going to handle this.
Okay, all right.
But in such a way that's...
You didn't take those drugs in the meantime.
Oh, I didn't take all those drugs that could have caused all these other side effects. Right. And it's not the right why behind the problem.
Right.
So always you want to know what's causing it. You've got GERD. Well, go look into your intestines and see how your intestines are functioning. You've got a muscle ache or pain. Is it coming from the drug you're taking? Is it coming... Well, what's the why behind it, you know?
Right.
Little things like that.
Right. I understand. That's good.
I can tell you this, from my experience in my 39 years, I've seen a tremendous uptake of myalgias and cataracts in the eyes and people having memory blurbs or loss or forgetfulness, and they are on statins. And I have also discussed with them to discuss with their medical doctor whether or not they want to wean down on the statin, And when they do, it's kind of like a bit of a miracle. They feel better. Their memory's coming back. And it's like, well, could that be the why behind why they're having the issue on that? So, and also obviously get your blood checked and see what your numbers are and if it makes sense. But if you're on, I mean, you can get dangerous if you're taking your cholesterol, you're calling it at 100, 110. You need cholesterol for hormones and brain function, all sorts of things. And if you're dropping it to a dangerous level, you could get in trouble. Once again, the brain is 60% cholesterol. Think about that.
Right.
If it's that much, and we're seeing an increase in dementia and Alzheimer's and whatnot, do we really want to put fuel on the, we want to put gasoline on the fire, or do we want to find out what we can do more naturally through lifestyle, through diet, through exercise? I'll say one thing, and I encourage people to laugh, because laughing turns on your vagus nerve. Humming, whistling, cold shower, turn your vagus nerve on. The vagus nerve is your parasympathetic nervous system. It's rest and relaxation. And that's why the monks go hum. That's why they say laughter is your best medicine. Find yourself, if you can, turning on your vagus nerve, because it's like the yin-yang. It's the sympathetic nervous system is that fight or flight. That's where I put a tiger in front of you and you want to run.
Yeah, right.
Or stressors in life, because, you know, you're just watching horror movies or you're just constantly type A, very stressed, versus having a balance in there. And if you could turn your vagus nerve on and have more rest and relaxation, you can pinch your ears and you can turn it on. You can stroke your sternocleidomastoid and turn it on. There's all sorts of ways of turning the vagus nerve on that can create a more calm, and you'll do better as a general rule. Hmm. And I like to, in my practice, I like to be humorous because whether people know it or not, they're turning their vagus nerve on when they laugh. It happens to be the longest nerve in the body. It's the 10th cranial nerve, and hey, laugh, whistle, and hum. You do yourself a favor. Well, and you feel better as a general rule.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to end our conversation, because that's what we're all looking to do, to feel better. Right. There's little things like that.
Makes a difference.
Okay, Bob.
Okay.
Little things like that makes a difference.
Oh, yes. Yes. Hello.
You are on, Bob.
Okay, John. Thank you. Well, that was Dr. Rod Gilbert. And as I mentioned when the interview began, you can find him and his practice at chiropractorbradenton.com. Been a chiropractor for 39 years now, but he does a lot more than just chiropractic. So take a look at his website and you'll find that out. So I'd like to mention that support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069. Or manateespirit.com, manateespirit.com. So I certainly, when Dr. Gilbert mentioned he wanted to talk about statins, I did a little research on the internet, and I found a couple of doctors who I had listened to. They gave some presentations on the internet, and I'd like to give you their names and the title of their videos in case you want more information than what Dr. Gilbert had given you this morning. And one of the doctors is Dr. Ford Brewer. Let me spell his last name. B as in boy, R as in Robert, E-W-E-R. Dr. Ford, like the automobile, Brewer. And the title of the video is The Shocking Truth About Statins, What Your Doctor Isn't Telling You. So that's one. You can check him out. Another one is a doctor I've been listening to now for at least 6 or 7 months on all different medical subjects. He's a MD, he's an alternative MD. So let me give you his name, Dr. Sunil Dan. You spell his first name, S-U-N-E-E-L, And then the second name is D-H-A-N-D, like hand with a D in front of it, Dr. Sunil Dan. And the title of his video is Cholesterol High? I don't want statin. Tell me this. That's the title of his video. So there's plenty of info out there. You know, confer with your doctor. But I think I made a good point to Dr. Gilbert. I think we should all have alternative practitioners so we can get some alternative views if we're talking to a doctor who is recommending any medications for us, because there's pros and cons to most medications. So, John, did you happen to find that?
I did a little digging, and I came up with it. I hope it's the right one.
That's great. Well, I'll be back next week on the Peace and Justice Report, because Tom Walker is going to be away. We usually alternate weeks, but Tom asked me to do next week's show. So I'll be back next week with the Peace and Justice Report, and I'm going to leave the show right now. John's going to play something by Ram Dass, and then after that we'll go right to Democracy Now. So thank you for tuning in this morning, and we will talk to you next week. Okay, John, go ahead.
What are we to do? What should we do today? What should we do in our lives? How do we live our lives with sufficient perspective, moment to moment, so that we can enter into the moments of life with equanimity and peace? So there is truth or wisdom. There is compassion, love. There is equanimity and peace. And there is a passionate life, a life fully lived. Those are the four criteria. Those are where you're going. And out of all that comes joy when you're living that way. Truth, wisdom, in harmony with the universe around you, in the Tao, in the way of things. So your life feels from moment to moment, yeah, I'm in the right place at this moment. I mean, it's weird, but this is just what I should be doing just now. So there is truth or wisdom. There is compassion, love. There is equanimity and peace. And there is a passionate life, a life fully lived. How to realize those things is what yoga and spiritual practices are about.
For shorty, bang, bang, the look your way. I like the way you work it. Trump tight all day, every day. You're blowing my mind, maybe in time. Baby, I can get you in my ride.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I thought to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.